Howdy, folks. Welcome back to the House of Cards show for the British Tech Network. Today we're talking episode 7 and 8. So that's chapter 20 and chapter 21 in Netflix. And joining me is Roberto.
Hey, everybody.
All right, Roberto, let's just get started. Charlotte can't make it, by the way, today, but that's okay. She'll be back. We're combining two episodes here, and you certainly we just did a pre-show discussion of how the thread lines between the two shows. What do you think yourself? Do you see the best? What's the overall arching theme of these two episodes that you think connect them together?
I mean, there's so many, because we're talking about the pre-show about, you know, the series and how it kind of comes out and sort of released and everything else in between. For me, I mean, it's going to probably be the whole just Frank and every part of his sort of A plot, for lack of better words, because it's difficult to talk about House of Cards, especially when we talk about, because, you know, in the pre-show, we kind of we mentioned this in our own sort of discussion, but House of Cards is that kind of show that gets the advantage of having everything released at once. And because of that, people start to judge it, the series as a whole, quicker than you would on, say, something like a Lost or a Gotham, or even some other kind of thing like a Breaking Bad. Like, if you were to do Breaking Bad now, you know, you could do, you know, season one as a whole show, season
two.
Season,
or Better Call Saul. Yeah.
You know, you know, now watching Better Call Saul is going to have an entirely different kind of emotional thing, because you'll know what happens in Breaking Bad, and you'll start, you know, working out the timeline and things like
absolutely
that.
Absolutely true.
So, where House of Cards, it comes out completely, you know, everything's out here. Enjoy at how you will. And then all the papers are not talking, you know, it's never, you know, if you start watching, like, look at, like, a lot of entertainment stuff, and I have, as a guy that catches up on television through Hulu, that I get sort of the episode after the fact, after the papers have written about it, after things have happened, that you realize that there's no, in House of Cards land, there is no, did you catch last night's episode? And
Water
there's no even
discussion.
Article talking about the bombshell of Stabler leaving something or whatever, if you talk SVU or something, you know, that kind of thing. There's no bombshells like that in House of Cards, because we know what happens in the next episode. Everyone does. So people tend to talk about this series as a whole and then start talking about the arcs that are important, you know, much like you would like a whole book or something like, or series.
I agree. And actually, you know, I thought it was kind of funny how I thought that people, when season two came out, a lot of us binged it. I'm one of them, as we all know. And I thought that people were being very appropriate on Twitter and other area social media networks by saying just things like, oh my God, or just, you know, shock, or when we got to the first episode, you know, which was Zoe's death, because that was the big shocker so far, I think, of the season. So but you didn't really have that opportunity to really discuss it right away.
No, not like you would in traditional television. And that's fine. That's totally cool. It's just it makes doing that sort of thing difficult. But what's really cool about that concept is that you can see kind of with our episode today, where you start to see these through lines that go through the episodes, not just these like plot lines that are dragged along and kind of piddled through there or kind of have this like connecting story building, but real honest to God through lines, like kind of our first topic, one of them being just the whole Claire Frank, specifically Claire and Trisha Walker kind of situations.
Yeah, let's talk about that. It wasn't my favorite part of the show previously. This time around, after, this must be my third viewing, but over a course of a year, that I picked up on some things from this relationship between Claire and Frank and Gareth and Trisha that I thought was kind of interesting. What I saw was, I mean, I think I definitely saw it the first time around. So was that Frank and Claire were having these discussions about how the president and his wife are doing. And, you know, as we've seen, we've already had a discussion between Claire and Frank about Claire's concern over Christina. And the conversation with Frank was not, hey, you know, we could really, you know, mess things up for them if we just put that little spike in there about Christina, make Tricia start thinking or becoming paranoid of her relationship with the president. And it was more of, you know, I don't really like Christina. I don't, you know, it was the relationship between Frank, or what we've seen between Frank and Claire when they talk about the president and the first lady, is sort of a wink and a nod throughout the whole thing. During this dinner, they're sitting around the table and, you know, someone offers them pie and the president doesn't want pie. And then Tricia says, well, I'm going to have pie. And they're having this kind of like little sort of bickering going on. And there's shots between Frank and Claire, like, see what the stress is getting to them. It's getting to their relationship. They have this knowing sort of this connection. And I almost sort of think that there's something we're missing. It's as if there's a story that takes place maybe late at night when they're sitting in bed reading, where they talk about how are they going to plan to really put pressure on this relationship.
I don't think it's that. I think ultimately it comes from a place of, okay, because when I look at Claire, and this is really what I...
You don't think that in some way Claire is really kind of, I mean, because she's really getting her nose in their business. But, you know, going as far as suggesting that they need counseling.
And she is, but I think what she's doing is this. Ultimately, Claire's sort of MO is being threatened by younger women. That is her MO. She's very threatened when it comes to younger, more motivated women.
I think she's threatened by Tricia because she's not the first. Tricia's the first lady, and she's not.
Yes, for sure. That plans into it. But her big thing is. Let me put it this way. If we go back to season one, her big threat was at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, she had this little biological clock thing where she felt time was slipping away, and she wanted to see if she had kids and all that stuff and everything else in between. Whereas now, since there's no kids involved and there's never going to be kids between her, Frank and her, and she knows that, well, then she has a certain other legacy to do so. And when you have a girl like the aide, what's her name? Oh, God. She dated Peter Russo.
Christina,
thank you. My brain...
No, it happens to me.
When you have someone like Christine involved, who is very, very this young, you know, girl that has already proven that she will leave her past by the wayside to move forward. That's a threat. That's a big threat because, you know, at one point, you know, early on, it might have been season two. Yeah, it was season two when our now currently in prison journalist guy was sort of, you know, poking at her. She didn't want to talk about the story. She didn't want to even go about it. She had left Peter Russo completely and utterly out of her mind. To get up the ladder, to get where she wanted to get to.
That's true. Good point. Mm-hmm.
And Claire really does find that threatening a lot. That's why she, you know, when it came to the whole everything else. So for her, I think it's more based on Christine than it is so much on Tricia Walker and Garrett. In that, yes, she'll put that seed of doubt there, and yes, it's going to influence into a relationship thing, but they're going to talk it out, they're going to work it out, they're going to have this discussion. And of course, her having information on the whole marriage isn't a bad thing either, but really for her, it's she wants Tricia on her side because she has a vice president, and she has this bill she wants to push through in terms of Congress to kind of keep the press off of her, but it helps out a lot to get rid of somebody that she knows has the ambition to go further and could screw every bit of plan up that Frank ever had. Because ultimately, if her and Frank were talking about it, they would probably let Christine do whatever. They'd probably push that part of the relationship more. Because
She had a meeting with Christine and said, I want you to really reach out to Tricia. I want you to do things for her. And then
let me put it this way. When I say do things for her, I mean they would
obviously
really...
Tricia doesn't want that because she didn't want her to order the bottle of wine and she said, I'm talking to my husband here. You know?
Well, the thing is, her threat isn't coming from Christina being a person of power. Her threat is Christina coming in and sleeping with her man.
That's what I mean.
Words.
That's what I
but
mean.
But the point is that if Claire wanted to completely and utterly screw that up so that there'd be some type of rift between Trisha and Garrett, and that would cause the president to stand back and Frank to come into power as a vice president, we would have seen Christine pushed a little bit further, not necessarily subtly in this way, but more that, because ultimately by doing this, we're showing that there's a bit of reinforcement. I almost, like I said, only because of how Claire has worked in the past and how she tends to really zero in on one single person and one single threat versus a whole kind of giant picture thing, I have a feeling that that's who she's zeroing in on Christine versus Garrett and Trisha Walker, because they're important. But to her, Christina is the potential threat.
I don't think that she thinks Christina is a threat at all. I don't see her. I think she sees Christina as a tool, but I think we disagree there. Trisha calls Claire in the middle of the night and wants that number to the doctor because they've had something, and Frank overhears half the conversation, and she gives him the name of the doctor, and so that she gets back into bed, and they sit there for a moment, and he says, so Frank says to her, so what do you think? And she says, we'll see. You know, and there's something up between Frank and Claire and their interest in the relationship of the president. And the other end of that, which I guess we could go into in a moment when we start talking about the attack on the administration by this other group, is that the president is really starting to lose his cool. He's really taking offense to people who are giving him advice or doing anything. And I think he's really, you know, so it's kind of like, this is just another element of it for Frank.
If I were to say what the angle is, I would say it's both Claire and Frank becoming friends and gaining the trust of Garrett and Trisha. And the only reason I even bring that up is that during that moment of where he's yelling, Frank goes, he specifically states, as your friend, I'm saying to do this.
Yeah.
And even at that moment when they kind of split off and they, you know, the men go in their own area and the women go their own area, it's very friendly. It's meant to be casual. It's meant to be this, because that if their angle is anything, it's that angle. It's the angle of having the president and vice president be your good friends, beyond just these sort of office chum kind of things, and beyond that, to gain trust, which they've shown in the past to do. They've had meetings with other things. If you've ever seen like the dinner things in season one that they, you know, that Claire and Frank attended, where there were multiple other Congress people they had to, you know, talk to and everything else, it's totally within their realm of that, if working as a couple, of showing that. And I don't see if there's an angle, that's the angle. Because that's the more important angle of having, you know, this sort of idea of trust. Whether the trust is real or not doesn't matter. It's the idea that the President of the United States, you know, Garrett Walker, trusts the Vice President in everything he says, so that if ever, for example, I don't know, Frank wanted to say, hey, there's this bridge we need to kind of work on, you think you can make a deal? He may trust that more than, say, a Raymond Tusk. Mm-hmm. That's my guess. That'd be my guess entirely, is that, and only because if Garrett and Trisha's relationship goes sour, then that really jeopardizes a lot of things. That specifically for Claire, and as we've seen in the past, when it came to the whole water initiative, Claire at times does look out for Claire, and will put wrenches in Frank's plans. And so I have a feeling that if they're talking about anything else, it's more of, all right, we're a team, let's figure out how the team can win. And by having both Walkers on your side and showing that both Walkers are important to you, and, you know, that really what tells me about the whole relationship thing has nothing to do with anything of of a like, well, let's use this as leverage against the president. Like, no, that's, I mean, yes, that's going to come into it for sure, and yes, information is going to be coming, you know, back just because that's how back channels work, but it's a lot more value, you know, from the world of Frank and from the world of Claire, it's a lot more valuable to have a friend in power at that kind of level.
And also now they now that they've taken Claire's suggestion and gone to her former counselor, they've really sort of put a lot of trust into Frank and Claire. So now
Exactly.
that joins that relationship even closer because,
Exactly. All right, well,
yeah.
let's before we move on to our next kind of thing, because this is as we're talking about two episodes, we got to kind of combine stuff. We got to thank some people first, and that being, of course, the awesome people at UK2.net. They cover all the bandwidth and hosting costs for all the shows here at the British Tech Network. They give you web addresses, help you build websites, and give you all the help you need to manage your websites and handle all that traffic stuff. If our dear Charlotte Henry was here with us today, she would be singing the praises of UK2.net, talking about how they gave her support at the moment she needed support and how they helped her with all her crazy traffic and everything else in between. So I don't have to go into that. If you want to ever see the power that is UK2.net, just check out her site and you can see just how quickly it'll load, how much traffic it can take among the craziest of abuses. And of course, they'll definitely help you out. And we've learned they'll even help you out on weekends. That's very important because some people won't do that. So if you want to, head on over to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors for a list of offers and codes available to you. We'd like to thank the UK2.net people for sponsoring us here at the British Tech Network.
Very good. So the actual first episode of season or episode 7, the very beginning opening scene is an attack ad, which I thought was great. And it's apparently funded by some committee to support the friends of this Republicans or the people. Not even that. It's like friends against people who can care about,
People in the
money and
back pocket of
power.
Windows.
Yeah.
Let's
Just a random name that they always
let's
use.
just throw it out. It's people in the back pockets of Raymond Tusk.
Yes.
And it's so amazing that when that opened up, because when it started, I was like, oh, they're starting with a tech ad. And it was like a really kind of a fun sort of thing to see.
Yeah.
You know, see Kevin Spacey in an attack ad first and foremost. That was fun to see his face in one of those political attack ads, going like, oh damn, this is actually a part of the story. This whole chunk of the story between the two episodes is my favorite thing in the entire episodes. I always like seeing Frank and Tusk fight because it's like seeing two giant bulls, like two deers, if you will, just locking horns and trying desperately to get power. It's so great. So give us what the overview is, Jackie.
They find out that there's these attack ads, and a lot of money is being given to the Republican Party somehow to fund it. And so they know that there's somebody in, because they do favors for certain Republican congressmen and through the president's administration, the Democratic Party administration. So they know that there's somebody there who they've given a military base to or appropriated funds for some other pet project who has really gone behind them, and they need to figure out who it is. And this is when President Walker really starts to lose his cool because he didn't see it coming. He didn't know it was going to happen, and he blames his chief of staff. He blames Frank. He blames Jackie, the House Majority Whip, and he wants to find out where it's coming from. It only takes Frank a minute to figure it out. He knows
Oh,
it's
because
coming
the
through.
thing is that Frank already knows. He already is. The thing with Frank is that he knows who is doing it. He just doesn't have the proof to back it up.
Right. So
And
that's what he
that,
has Stamper for.
right. Well, that's why he has Stamper go to the dirty work. And what I love about this whole through line is you really see the two powers clash. I remember, you know, if we go back two episodes ago, maybe three, I forget exactly when, but you know, Frank had mentioned that it's going to be a civil war. It's going to be bloody, and we're starting to really see the battle lines drawn, and we're starting to see the bloodiness of it, and sort of how it goes. Because one of the big funnels of the attack ad money that we learn is this guy by the name of Lanigan, and he's sort of this Native American that has a gambling casino that. Is how the money is being funneled. Like it goes from either Fang or Tusk, They go to this casino, go to a private floor, bet on whatever. Who cares? It doesn't even matter where the money truly comes from. And then that because that money is no longer Raymond's to do with what you will, you know, Lanigan will just funnel, you know, to the Republicans, and it becomes a sort of interesting way of how the shell game works in political funding, which I found really fascinating. I love when we start talking about all that stuff and how that shell game is put into place.
And Frank completely figures it out that what he's doing is he's stacking Congress towards anything that Tusk wants, so that he doesn't have to rely on Frank and his connection with the president. So
right. Well, not even so much that. It's that the point is we are starting to see the two powers and how they play in this. For example, we take Lanigan. The only reason I'm bringing Lanigan up is because if I were to say, you know, we look at Frank's side of stuff, you know, we see how power can influence people. We'll talk about this later, but when we take someone like Seth and Remy, just we'll talk about more of that. You see that that's sort of where the power will influence, because there's a line there. We'll, like I said, we'll get to there. But what I love about this section is that we really actually get to see where money influences and how money influences, because there's a moment.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but and also how those with the money don't just give to one party, they give to both. And so that's what, and Tusk traditionally was a supporter of the Democratic Party, but now he knows he's got to, and he's not, but he's not doing it himself, he's using Lanigan to channel that
right
money through.
But what I say about the money, the power, I mean, it goes like this. The money buys sort of the political influence. This is, again, because right now we're seeing the two powers clash. And we see it very, very cleanly this episode, very much so. We see it so cleanly with a lot of different things. And one of the big things to show is Lanigan. Lanigan's a great example of what money can do. In chapter 20, when Lanigan and Frank meet at Frank's place, Lanigan says something along the lines of, "I don't trust any white man, you know. Money is as far as I can stack it," that kind of thing. You know, showing what he really gives a damn about. He talks about all the money and stuff like that. He goes in and starts saying, I don't trust any white man. You let me through the back door. And Frank's like, everyone comes through the back door. It's part of security. It's how we do things here. Whereas we go further down in episode 21, and Lanigan, when Tusk is around at their sort of private meeting, says a really good line where he essentially says, you know, like they're eating this very fancy steak, you know, almost like Kobe beef or something like that. He goes, you know, in the original tradition, we would have, you know, prayed to the heifer spirit for whatever, all that stuff. But for $200 a pop, I say, F it. And it really shows ultimately what he truly cares about. All he concerns is money. And it's so amazing to see how that side, how that lapdog side works, because everybody is a pawn of either in this world of either Frank or Tusk, and it just depends on what you want more, whether you want power or you want money.
Oh boy, this would be a great tie-in to the Seth and Remy issue, but I know we're not there yet. But Seth says that he says two different things to two different people about what he wants more, the money or the power.
That's the big thing, is that that's really what is at stake here. This is why this whole Civil War thematic really applies, because you have these powers. Because you have Frank just really, showing this sort of world that he works in, he knows political stuff. And again, that meeting with Lanigan, that first one in the private house, really also shows that, because the offer Frank is giving to Lanigan is like, I'll give you a complete ear to the president. Whatever you want, we can do. Mm-hmm. And Lanigan's like, that ain't, you know what I like about money? And this is such a telling sign, such a thing that I don't think Frank quite understands about the world yet. Because he's been so entrenched in D.C. that he's forgotten how the rest of the world operates. And Lanigan illustrates this perfectly how everybody else views it and why Raymond still has some tricks up his sleeve that Frank doesn't quite realize. And that's, he goes, the only thing I like about money is it can buy things. It can get real stuff. I can exchange it for this and whatever. You know, something like power is a harder concept to explain and to exchange for quote unquote goods and services and things like that. Good Whereas point. Money is pretty substantial. If I give you, for example, $20,000 just for whatever, $20,000 can buy a lot, can feed food, can do all this stuff. Is a very
buy me some clothes, resource. Buy some cars. I think that's what he was saying.
Very valuable resource. And Flanagan, at his private estate, how much he values that engine of power, how much he puts that above all else. And again, to a guy like Raymond Tusk, that is your lapdog. That's the guy that's going to follow you because that's what he cares about. Mm. That's what he did. And not to jump ahead, I'll say as my last point, because that whole private meeting is like one of my all-time favorite Frank moments, and I always love the big giant middle fingers that Frank will give in some sort of speech, and him just throwing the $200 steak into the pool as the dog chases after it. It's just like a lapdog, you know, totally predictable, just like a lapdog would do. And
yes.
Down, just like, oh.
Dogs are so predictable.
Yeah, dogs are so predictable. That's what it is. It's such a great line because he's absolutely right. And I love, and I, again, it's showing because, again, we right now just have two deers bucking heads. And I don't know which one's going to win because they both have equal force. You know, this is like you know, if we were to take another maybe not necessarily good versus evil kind of thing, but it is like Voldemort and Harry Potter at the end of the movie, just sort of blasting beams and just trying to see who's going to vouch for power because it could swing either way at this point.
Yep. And every time Frank thinks he's got an edge on Tusk, Tusk is able to find out what Frank's up to. Frank calls in the chief of the Uruguay tribe to give them status so that they can have a casino so that all the money can be funneled through there. And that's what I believe that that's the real reason here is that it's easy to funnel the money that, through an independent nation within the United States like that. So
more importantly, the big thing of funneling the money through that is that because Native American, like, you start getting into tricky things, and you start really taking advantage of history and sort of all those atrocities and working it in, it works out. And again, you start to, you know, when you start to look at that ad, the ad's a very indicator. We talked about the beginning, we kind of glossed over the name. I jokingly said, it's, you know, Friends of Raymond Tusk. But by putting this, like, paid for by the friends of whatever the hell, like some other thing, you can claim this. You know, Raymond, you know, when he talked with Frank, it's like, I don't give any money. Yeah. I don't personally give money. I may give money to this casino here, and that person may want to give money to this group here, and that group may support this, but
sure,
I don't know. I didn't do it.
Up next week.
Yeah. Like, I didn't do it personally, so you can't track it through any sort of SEC filings, where basically you don't have any concrete proof.
Yeah.
And that's the problem Frank has right now, is that he just doesn't have the proof, and he has to work in these kind of weird back channels that he's not quite used to working in.
As this is completely a side note, I probably shouldn't be throwing them in, but I thought it was funny that the scene where the Uruguay tribe, I think is White Smith was his name. I'm not sure what it.
Yeah.
I had it somewhere. Anyways, he comes in and he's staring directly at this portrait of Andrew Jackson. And so Frank has Stamper take it down. And then in a couple scenes later, after there he goes back into his office, he's aligning it back up perfectly. You know, he's going to put it back up because it's part
of. Oh, yeah, of course.
But not because he obviously. You know, nobody today would say that they could really stand for the terrible things that Andrew Jackson did, but it's the respect for the White House and for this history and the things that the thing that gives him his power. And I think that that's what he was.
Yeah. I don't know. One could maybe argue about Jackson's belief on the banks.
Well, that's a whole nother podcast.
I'm kidding. The point I'm trying to. I'm kidding. I'm just making a joke there. But regardless of that, like, that's why I love this, talking about these two episodes together, because that's such this big thing, and again, seeing Lanigan from 20, you know, from episode 20 into 21, and how that works, and seeing that he'll play the Native American card when he needs to play it.
Yeah,
but like, in all intents and purposes,
coming
he
in the back
damn.
Door. Yeah. Oh,
he absolutely. Doesn't care about tradition. He doesn't care about that because all he cares about
right
is money.
Right.
And it just so happens that the man that's giving him the most money is where his loyalty will lie. And whether or not that's important to Frank doesn't matter, you know, because he'll try to work in the other tribe. Like, well, I can try to go through this back channel of getting his other tribe approved. It's like, no, they just wanted to be part of, they just wanted the money. And I'll let them in for the money because that's what matters to me. And it's very, again, that meeting between Tusk and Lanigan and Frank really, really illustrates it, not just because of who's there and what they're eating, but just, you know, there's a pool that he's never swam in.
Mm-hmm.
He has a pool that because it's chlorinated, he doesn't swim in because it hurts his eyes and that kind of thing. We should probably move on to our next thing, but before we move on to what our next entire chunk of topics are, we got to thank one more organization, one more company that supports us here at the British Tech Network, and that being the Network Union. They're an authorized BT business partner licensed seller, global and UK services. Their experience has been earned from working with large global and UK enterprises, but now they also work with SMEs. They're kind of the guys that handle sort of the bigger backbone connection things like MPLS, VPLS, Internet, Ethernet lease lines, and wide area networks, that sort of thing. So if you're there in the UK and you're looking kind of something beefier connection, maybe you're starting up a new data center, maybe you're powering your own data center, you're trying to find someone that has way better support and can help you grow and become bigger things, check out the Network Union. Head over to networkunion.co/British Tech for more information. We'd like to thank them for sponsoring all the stuff here at the British Tech Network.
Thank you. Well, there's one other little side point to this, and I think it's just important because we're combining the two episodes, is the sort of battle between Frank and Linda Vasquez. She doesn't want the president to push the Port Jefferson Bridge. And as you know, in the beginning of the season, that was the president's main goal. He wanted this bridge must be made. I don't know what his exact words were. But he's given it up. He's passed it on. And he wants to do some other kind of major infrastructure project during his administration before the midterms or after the midterms. He says, let's wait for the midterms. Frank wants this now. Not only that, he realizes from Stamper that Fain will cut off his support and work in the refineries deal that he has with Tusk, which will hurt Tusk in a huge way if the president gets the Port Jefferson Bridge passed. So Frank is trying to get this done. Linda says, no, we've already done this. Please respect that. And Frank goes, okay, yeah, I'm behind you. But then immediately goes and talks to the president and tries to get him to do it. And he says, well, Linda says you're obsessed about this. And I'm starting to see that. Why? And Frank says, well, you don't want to know. The best thing I can do for you is not tell you because you should not get your hands involved. But trust me, as your friend, this needs to happen.
Right. What's interesting about that whole chunk, you had mentioned earlier that we saw the stress getting to President Walker, to Garrett. We also see the stress getting to Frank, because there's a moment later on before Linda ends up putting her resignation and all that stuff in there, that Frank goes off on Linda, completely sort of takes, you know, pulls off the mask, if you will, and just lays into her.
Yes. Absolutely. He says, you know, I'm going to talk to her, talk to the president if I want to talk to the president, because she takes him off the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
He's very furious with that. And he says that you're nothing more than a glorified scheduler. And when she walks away, he says something really horrible that I don't think we should really repeat for this show, but I will say the first few things. He says, she walks out the door and he says, that backstabbing vomit.
Well, no, she says it. He says that when he says that specifically, not then. He actually says what he said there.
Not during the resignation. It's before that. It's when
which is one of my favorite. Like, again, I am always a fan when Frank breaks the fourth wall. I love this the most.
But he comes back around after the resignation.
Oh, does it? Okay.
And then she gives him the Medal of Honor from the the first Medal of Honor awarded to a Hispanic American, and it was during the Civil War, because she knows how much he likes the Civil War. And then he says, she leaves the room, and he says, I've never thought higher of her than I do now. She lost, but she played to win. So he's saying something nice to her, but, well, of course you've never thought higher of her because you just said this horrible thing about her.
Well, I mean, you know, basically, I mean, like I said before, you know, it's nothing personal. It's just politics, you know, to paraphrase a phrase on business, because it isn't nothing, you know. Frank had her opinion on her, and it was bad, but look, she played what she had to do, and she did what she had to do. Again, I feel bad because a lot of where that stems is almost so hard, and I feel, you know, terrible for Linda as a character, but I mean, you know, sometimes you got to lose. Sometimes you got to, you know, to get to the top, you got to kind of destroy people, and Frank definitely will do that.
Yeah.
But let's move into the other thing. We've been teasing this since the last segment.
Okay.
That being Remy, Seth, Tusk, Connor, all of our PR lackeys, for lack of a better word. It's weird to talk about Remy as a lackey, but Remy truly, truly, if anything else, is a complete lackey in this episode.
Yeah, and Seth is a little brilliant, the way he plays Remy, and doesn't play Frank, it seems. Is he playing Frank at all? Or is he as... because basically, Frank asks him, puts him on the spot, and says, "Are you working for Tusk?" And then he says, "Well, Remy approached me, or yes, I'm working for." I don't know exactly how that conversation came out, but he admits that he was originally supposed to come in, and he was hired by Remy to find out about the abortion or find out what was, get some dirt. And he said, "But I saw you. I saw the work you did with the education bill and how you passed that through." And because he said, "Well, I bet they're offering you a lot of money." And he said, "I don't care about the money. That doesn't mean anything. I saw what you did, and that's what I respect. And I went, you know, so I, the
at
money
first,
doesn't matter."
I'll be honest. At first, I thought that Seth was playing Frank. Okay. I thought that they were playing Claire and them, because obviously we see the interaction between Remy and we see the interaction between Seth and how that's played out, everything else, and how coy it is with the phone and all that kind of BS. Yeah, I mean, especially when you know, at first I thought they were totally, that Seth was totally just playing Frank and Chris, you know, and all those guys, just because of all the whole, like, phone thing between Remy and all that kind of BS to sort of cloak it. But the moment that made me realize that they weren't there wasn't so much the Frank talk, because even that could be playing Frank a bit and stuff, that it was very quickly realized to Frank, "I know who you're working for." And Seth realized that too. And then when it came to that second interaction with Remy and Seth, when it came to that last one, the whole, you know, "You're a parasite, like, so are you, but in a nicer suit," you come to see again the two powers come together.
Yes.
Because you see someone like Remy, who had been part of the political side, had worked in the power, said, "You know what? Money's far more fascinating to me."
Remy had Seth's job. He was his press secretary.
Right, and that's the point. The point is that Remy was like, "You know what? Money is what I want." And you see someone like Connor too be like that as well, because once we give him a cushy job of promoting SpaceX and that kind of thing, that becomes sort of like, well, that's a paycheck. And that's what they think of. And that's what most PR people think in.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about Seth, and what becomes apparent in that meeting, is that Seth isn't like other PR people. He doesn't care about money. Money is not his end goal. Power is. And it becomes very apparent in that meeting, because right away, Remy knows that Seth has turned. And he goes, "How much are they paying you?" And it's very apparent, most likely, it ain't as much as Tusk could pay. Because that's, you know, Remy's trying to appeal to that engine, because that's the engine he understands, that's the engine he likes, that's the engine he works in, is this money engine or whatever. But when you interact with people that are like Frank, money doesn't matter. Money isn't the end goal. Power is. And it's very apparent that Seth is in that same camp. And I like that fact, because...
Mm-hmm.
It's cool to see, sort of, you know, because we haven't seen a foil for Remy yet. You know, we've seen a foil for Frank with the whole Raymond Tusk thing. We haven't seen one quite yet for Remy, and I think Seth is going to be that foil. It's going to be that inverse of that, you know, because we're starting to see sort of, you know, here's Team A of political power, here's Team B of money power, and they both have their corresponding, you know, counterparts, like, you know, here, if you know, Frank's the king, here's the queen, and so on and so forth. And I like the fact that we're seeing the foil to Remy be Seth, because Seth is also resourceful. He's just now resourceful for an entirely different portion, and that pissed the heck, you know, off when it came to Remy. He's like, I did your job in 2 days. Why couldn't you do that? Because I'm not working for you anymore. He's trying to play it. He just couldn't play it that well because he was being a little too obvious. But I do like the fact that it was, you know, because again, I thought right off the bat, like, oh, Seth is playing these guys. And then that moment came, and I go, oh, no, he's not. He actually is on Team Frank.
Because, you know, then now Remy has to go out and do the job that he wanted to hire Seth for, and he goes and discovers that Claire may have had an affair with Adam Galloway, the photographer that we saw last season or whenever it was. So he's doing that, and he's trying to expose, continue to find dirt on Frank, and it's, you know, you can kind of tell Seth was very resourceful. And getting that journal from the doctor who gave her that abortion, he probably very well could have found out the Adam Galloway story very easily. And he could have, I mean, he could have returned something to Remy and gotten paid. So I think that what you were saying is absolutely right. We can tell that Seth is the other version of this end of power.
And that's what's
how
really
it's played.
What I really like about that relationship. But as we're talking about Remy, I'm also reminded of the whole Jackie, the current house whip.
Yeah, they're still getting close.
That's this is what I think, so I'm curious to get your opinion on this, and I'm certain you'll have a different view than I will, but I think Jackie is really letting her emotions go run with her when it comes to Remy.
I think so. I think one of two things. I think either that, or it's another one of these things about the show that pops up where we've been watching it for a while, and there's really something else going on that we don't really see, but we kind of piece it together as it moves along. That's the only other thing I can think of, because there is a whole thing with Jackie and the bill that Claire once passed about the military. They keep asking her to pull support, because that's what she does. She's the whip. And she's not really doing that. She's kind of shoving it under the drawer and not working with her deputy house whip.
Well, because again, Jackie's a very complex character in terms of politics, because she truly, honestly still believes in things. She still has that spark in her eye. She's for lack of better words, very, very naive in terms of that engine.
And she's from the military too. That's where she got her
background.
Because
again, the big tell that she's letting her emotions get to her, and I say that in terms of a versus Frank or even versus a Claire, is there's a point in the show where she hits sort of dial Remy. And she then desperately tries to hit the end button. She hits it a couple times. She doesn't hit it just once like that. She's not casual. She's like, oh, shoot, I didn't mean to do that. You know, like that she was thinking about calling Remy. And it's very apparent, you know, even in the scene where they're talking about, like, all right, seriously, is Raymond Tusk paying stuff? I don't know what you're talking about. All right, let's just drop the political stuff, whatever. Let's just be personal now. And she's getting involved. And that really, the problem with that is that I don't know, because I know who Remy works for, and because I know how Remy has been, and we've seen sort of the other side of Remy at times, you know, he can be very charming. He's like Frank. He knows how Frank works.
She's really sleeping with the enemy here.
She's really sleeping with the enemy.
Whether she knows it or not.
Right, and that's sort of the thing I'm bringing up, and that I think Jackie is just really, like I said, she's still naive, and that's not a good thing to have. I think she'll learn. She'll eventually learn, and when she learns, it's not going to be pretty. Not necessarily because Jackie's going to be like, you know, distraught and leave. It's because Jackie has also proved in the past that when she gets cornered, she'll get pretty freaking crazy and do her own thing. And I don't think Remy quite sees that yet either. I think even he has a bit of a blind spot there. But I think Jackie has the bigger blind spot. I think that's gonna that, that it will bite will bite her in the butt, so to speak, in future episodes. My guess, but definitely, it's showing that like you know that's a big thing that Jackie needs to figure out. Because again, her big concern is, you know, she said, you know, when it came to getting into the whole stuff, that and it was very important when she was like talking with one of the older political people, that she's not Frank. That she doesn't want to be a Frank.
Right.
When, truth be told, that might be what she needs to be to get things done. But she doesn't know that yet. And she hasn't learned that yet because Frank saw something, but that something is still deeply buried in this sort of shell of emotions and feeling. Especially, you know, we see that when she's coming into as the whip, you know, when she has to sort of betray one of her like longest time friends and give away that secret, you know, and she did it, which is good. I mean, in terms of that, that makes her a hell of a whip, not necessarily a great person. Ultimately, that's really what's going to come down to, is that what's going to matter more to her is it going to be being a good person or getting things done. And in politics, as we're and especially in the world of House of Cards politics, those two things don't necessarily meet up.
I agree. I agree with you on Jackie and this Rummy situation. I don't know. It's like it's really hard to. This is where I need Charlotte to kind of come in because she's seen the rest of it and just.
No, I know that. That's why I'm coming in like this, explaining it from this point, because I know that whatever comes down the pipeline comes down the pipeline. But that's my feeling, is that there's still something, because again, Frank's been, you know, been a pretty damn good judge of character, in the series and past interactions. You know, he's definitely given Remy a complete upper things, and Remy has proven to be this very, you know, big PR force, just happens to work for the other side, but still a very important person. We're seeing Seth also being very resourceful, you know, still working for his side. And so we start, you know, if I take Frank as like my bellwether, as a guy that knows who's going to get stuff done, then yes, Jackie definitely will get stuff done. She just has to get over, you know, if she wants to keep doing this.
That's really her story here, is whether, how much of a Frank is she, or can she be, or will she become? I think that's really her story.
Exactly, and I think that's what I'm trying to say, is that because you have to be that. In the world of House of Cards, you have to be that guy. You have to be this sort of a little ruthless, a little crazy, a little, you know, psychotic internally.
Monstrous.
To get things done. Not because it's good or bad, because it's just politics. And that's just the nature of the game.
Yeah.
And Jackie as a character still, like I say, has this naive sort of spark in her eye, thinking that it's something else, that it is this sort of good versus evil kind of thing. Which it can be on a good storyline, but not in reality. In reality, it's a lot more shades of gray, and that's sort of what I love about the series, that it really, really exemplifies that politics has neither black nor white. It is all
absolutely
shades of gray.
Absolutely.
And it's something that makes us that. We're out of time, Jackie, speaking of which.
All right, well, that's it for now. I'm Jackie Hearn. You can reach me, JackieHearn81, on Twitter. And if you follow that, every night I do a short little video recording of children's stories to read adults to sleep, because I suffer from insomnia.
Aren't you working on something new? You know, something involving some type of, spin-off series from a very, very popular...
In the next week or so, you may see it's already up on Twitter. You can follow @LawyerUpPodcast. It's going to be a podcast on the series Better Call Saul. Thank you so much for allowing me to plug that. I was going to do that next week, but...
Well, because I know you're super excited, because, like, one, if I'm not mistaken, one of my personal friends, and I guess for yours too, is working on it. You and Rick Foster, I think, are doing it.
Rick Foster, yes.
Yeah, and Rick is a very much a, not a friend of this show, but a friend of a lot of the content I do. And I'm super excited to hear you two talk about that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad he's on board, because he's also somebody like yourself who can help keep me on track.
Yeah, no, that's what makes me super excited to hear you two talk about that series, because specifically I know I know Rick loved the hell out of Breaking Bad, and I'd love to hear what he has to say when it comes to Better Call Saul, for sure.
And I kind of, well, I definitely loved Breaking Bad, but I really love and live for comedy, and particularly things that Bob Odenkirk and, you know, the Mr. Show series, if anybody's
Same thing with Rick, and that's sort of why I'm really, really excited to hear you two talk about that show.
Well, hey, I know that people should be following you on YouTube, Cosmic Radio.TV, the user channel. Is that the user channel?
So if you want to ever check any of my content for geeky stuff, you can head on over to youtube.com/CosmicRadioTV or just head to the site, CosmicRadio.TV. And hit me up on Twitter, @Vincent404. Let me know what you think. Let us know what you think here for the House of Cards show. We have an email address, right?
No. But you can send it to the main British Tech Network, and you will forward them on to us.
Yeah, because we definitely want to know what you guys are thinking, especially as we approach season 3 coming down, what you guys want to see us talk about, how you'd like us to approach the show, because as much as it's our show, it is your show as well, and we want to make sure that you, the audience, really, really enjoys what we're doing, and you get everything you want out of it. Maybe you want longer episodes, maybe you want shorter episodes. Whatever it is, let us know.
That's my number one goal for next season, is that we have interaction from you guys. So the more that you input and tell us, hey, you know, you guys were completely off base. That's what I want to hear. Well, no, I want to hear we were great, but, definitely. No,
whatever, every bit of
I want something that sparks conversation.
Exactly. That's exactly the point.
So thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.